Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Ready!
Buffalo Bills game day on the Buffalo Bills Radio Network.
All right, here we go. We got to have a drive.
23 left. 23 left.
Will. 1, 2, 3.
And now, it's Countdown to Kickoff with your hosts, Nate Geary and Joe DiBiase.
Welcome all. Countdown to Kickoff here on the Buffalo Bills Radio Network, getting you ready for a 1 p.m. kick between the Buffalo Bills and the Miami Dolphins with John Murphy, Eric Wood calling the play-by-play from the Northwest Bank broadcast booth. Northwest Bank, increasing the value of you. Today's broadcast presented by Dr. Beyer Optical. For a look that's on fire, call Dr. Beyer. That's 646-EXAM. Time now for Constructing the Game Plan, presented by Admar Construction Equipment and Supplies. Equipment you need when you need it. Nate Geary here, Joe DiBiase, and Jeremy White joining us here for the segment. Gentlemen, not a lot of storylines, right? The offense is great. The defense is great. We got nothing to talk about. I wish that was the case. But there's little doubt that the pressure has been turned up on this Bills offense. Just it is what it is at this point, especially after the loss last week and the sort of events that happened at the end of the fourth quarter last week. And for the most part of the fan base wants to blame the offensive coordinator. Another part wants to blame the quarterback. And it's been kind of difficult to pinpoint which of them should shoulder the most blame in this. But to you guys, who maybe deserves the most blame for the struggles of this offense? And before I have each of you answer that question, I want to point this out because I've been sort of pounding the table about this when people are blaming Brian Daboll. Is Brian Daboll is scheming up two touchdowns a game that aren't being scored right now. Essentially, every week there is two plays that Josh Allen overthrows receivers that are wide open running for touchdowns. So that means to me, the offensive coordinator is putting 14 points on the board each week that aren't being executed. So for me, it's very difficult to just fall on the majority of that blame going to the offensive coordinator. So Jeremy, I'll start with you. Where does this lead you? And I think this probably leads down a path that we've all been talking about this week about the quarterback, but I am interested in your take.
Well, you know, there's a couple ways to think about that. If you're scheming up two touchdowns and aren't being connected on, choice one is, all right, we got to stop doing that because the plays aren't working. And if I keep doing that, they're failed plays. We don't get the points. Maybe I should stop scheming them up. The other is to do even more of them and figure, like, eventually it'll hit. And if it doesn't, it's clear the reason that they're not hitting is the quarterback fails to hit those deep balls. So, you know, I wonder about this offense, Nate, from the standpoint of the third and four play against Cleveland. Like, talk to me about that play, because I think back to watching E.J. Manuel, and this does not mean I think Josh Allen is E.J. Manuel, but when pre-snap reads are simplified on such a way that they were like on that play, you get John Brown one-on-one, that's where the ball's going. There's a better play, mm-hmm. And it was on the field, and it was available for you, and it was Cole Beasley, and I know that Brian Daboll said he made the right call, he went to Brown, and we get John Brown one-on-one, we throw it there. I need an offense that has enough, a quarterback that has enough agency when standing there to say, what am I going to do here? I've got three different choices. Now, does he not have the freedom to do that? Or does Brian Daboll not respect him enough to do that? Or am I asking for too much?
Well, the thing that I look to, Jeremy, to your point there, is if that was the right read, right, and you throw to the John Brown on one-on-one coverage, he gets one-on-one coverage a whole bunch during the
game.
He does. And when it came down to that moment, yes, maybe it's the right read, and maybe that's what he's coached to do in that moment. But I do need my quarterback, as you mentioned, to understand that, and this is the second time it happened in that football game, where mm-hmm. they take a shot on third and short when all you need is a first down to move the chains. And, you know, for me, that offense is moving. And I look at it like this, and Joe, I'll pose the same question to you, is this offense wants to sort of function as this grinded out, we want 10, 15 play drives. And with that, they're sort of void of that big play that we've been talking about, and it's because the passing offense can't seem to hit on it. But at a certain point, you start to wonder, the way that they want to win offensively leaves you a small margin of error. Because if you can't, how many teams are going on 5, 6, 7 plus 10, 15 play drives a game. It just it doesn't happen like that, but that's how this offense wants to function.
Right. Well, is it how they want to function, though, or do they have to function that way? Because like, there might be an argument to be made that Brian Daboll wants to run a vertical type of offense to at least some extent, because they did a lot of that last year, because not only if your quarterback is hitting on that is that big plays down the field, but me and Jeremy mentioned in the 9 o'clock hour how his yards per carry are cut in half. He averaged over 8 yards per attempt run last year, Josh Allen did. Now it's just over 4. And part of that, I think, is when you're not stretching the field, there's not as much man coverage down the field. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not opening up those rushing lanes that were open for him last year. So it's kind of it's twofold. It's you're not getting the big plays because Allen's not able to hit on them, plus the running ability is not all the way there like it was last season. So I'm left wondering, like, okay, logically, you would want some of that in your offense. And I would want to think Brian Daboll wants to do that a little bit, but how can you keep going to it? Or this is at least how he's probably treated the last couple games. How can I keep attempting and designing these routes down the field if every time it opens up, the quarterback misses it 10 yards over his head? So maybe Sean McDermott's comment about being more fearless will turn up the volume in which they're trying to stretch the field, because I can't imagine that he's not going to hit one all season.
Thing is, too,
he might not never be great at it, but come on, at least one or two, like at least enough to make the defense respect it.
He's at a career high 130 something odd attempts without an interception, and I'd like to take that number and throw it out the window, because mm-hmm. it doesn't mean anything to me. I'd like him to take more chances, and I think we all would like to see him take a little bit more chances and use that arm strength. Now, he's throwing the ball incredibly accurately from the 10 and 20 yard range. That intermediate throw, he's top 5 in the league in passer rating and accuracy percentage. So like, why it is that the 20 to 30 yard has been so, in the 20 plus has been so void, doesn't make sense to me. But Jeremy, like, you know what happens? You know what would get us to stop talking about this offense in such a way?
Touchdowns.
Mm-hmm. Not only touchdowns, but like a Lamar Jackson game against, listen, Lamar Jackson has 8 touchdowns and no interceptions in 2 games against the Dolphins and Cincinnati. Otherwise, his numbers, passing-wise,
pretty pedestrian,
yeah. Right? But those 2 games in those 2 matchups inflate his passing numbers to a point where no one has to complain about Lamar Jackson's passing ability.
That's one of the things. Like, when you beat up on the dregs of the league and you actually beat up on them, people take it for what it's worth. All right, fine, it was Miami and Cincinnati. But at least you showed you're clearly better than those teams. And that's where this Bills team has maybe fallen short. They have not distanced themselves from the really bad teams outside of their record. Their record is very far from Miami. But we watched the 2 teams play once, and they didn't look too different. And today, if they look pretty close yet again, then, you know, what are we going to be saying about this Bills team? They win 24-20. Okay, 7-3, but how good are they? They don't separate themselves from the bad teams nearly enough, and that's probably because the offense, you know, just tends to have its struggles. How much do you make of the whole, they have 9 new offensive players, and it's going to take time for them to mesh?
I mean, a little bit of it has to go into it, I think, right? I think we can't just dismiss it completely, maybe. But I do think at a certain point...
I mean, I do get teams where there are 11 new players. Like, does Arizona have 11 new offensive players and a new coach, and...
Yeah.
Well, also, wouldn't you see signs at some point over the course of the season that it's getting better? And I feel like the whole thing's just stuck in neutral. Like, where are the signs that they are meshing and there's more chemistry being developed and that they are improving? Like, the offense, to me, looks very much the same as it did the beginning of the season.
And for me, you know, everybody keeps talking about this run defense. And I was on my way in and I heard Sal say, you know, if the Bills have trouble stopping the run today, they're in full-on crisis mode. And I still don't think that they'll be in full-on crisis mode if they give up some rushing yards today. If they give up 100 yards to Kalen Ballage, it won't be great. But here's the thing that I worry about. The next 3 matchups, Phillip Lindsay, Royce Freeman, first-round pick and rookie of the year last year. On Thanksgiving, Ezekiel Elliott, one of the best running backs in football. And then the third week is against the Baltimore Ravens, who have the number 1 rushing attack in football. So for me... Yeah, the defense's ability to stop the run has been a storyline, but I think more so it's just been that the offense can't seem to get ahead in games. That's why their defense is having so much trouble against it. They're in easy run mode. Like, teams can continue to run the football against the Bills because the offense isn't a threat to put points on the board. So for me, there are a lot of issues with this football team, but I think the one thing that could really mask it all is a passing offense that's worth a damn. And right now, they sit passing wise. Let's see, in yards per game, 24th. Miami's 29th. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and honestly, they get up they have 6 additional yards added to their average after last week after Josh Allen throws for 260, I think it is. But their passing offense DVOA is 28th. Miami's is 31st. They're right there next to the Miami Dolphins, who have no weapons offensively. Their quarterback is Ryan Fitzpatrick. And you know what? I'd like to see Josh Allen play a little more like Ryan Fitzpatrick.
I will say this, though, on the rushing defense part of it. Like, Kalen Ballage is right now, like, Miami has not been good rushing the football all year. He's been by far their worst running back.
Yeah.
Like, 2.1 yards per carry.
Last week, yeah.
It took him, I think I have this right, it took him 50 carries to get to 100 yards in the season. So, okay, like, I get what you're saying to some extent, but and if he has 100 yards today and it took him 50 carries to get to 100 yards previous in the season, he does it today, that's going to be worrisome. But I think I'm on board with you. Like, this, you want to see signs that this offense has the potential, has the capability to separate itself from the Miamis of the world that are at the bottom of the league, like they're going to play today. Like, they should. I know Miami had a good game against them here in Buffalo, passing-wise, but the Bills should show today that, yeah, maybe we're not the best passing offense in the world, but we're better than this Miami Dolphins team, because they should be better than this Miami Dolphins team.
Well, the thing is, and the other thing I heard you guys talk about with Sal is kind of the conservative nature of Sean McDermott, and yes, he goes for it on fourth down, and I'm glad for that. I like the fact that they go for it on fourth down a lot, or in situations that call for it. He's not just punting every time they're inside opponent territory. So I do like that, but at a certain point, guys, like, I look at it from this standpoint, especially last week, and really every game that they've played in this season has been close, and even the ones against bad teams, it's like they lack, we're talking about playing without fear, but it seems like from the top down that there's this, we just want to play in, we're fine with close football games, we just want to run the clock out, we're fine winning by 7 points, where I think the caller Paul in the last hour talked about the Patriots, right? Like, their mindset as an offense is, we're going to continue scoring points. Join us. Welcome. We're going to score as many points as we can score on you today. That's not the mentality of this Bills offense at all. It's not. Their mentality is, let's score enough to win. Where the Patriots and the Kansas City Chiefs is, let's score until the other team can't anymore. And I would like a time and place where this Bills offense says, I just want to score as many points as I want to get as many running yards and passing yards and points as we possibly can get from this matchup. Not, and let's score enough. And it's that mindset. The problem is it trickles down from the top, Jeremy. It's a mindset. It's a culture that is starting from the head coach and the general manager, and it's bleeding into what this team's identity is as an offense.
Yeah, and at the same time, you know, they have pursued receivers. They traded for Calvin Benjamin. They pursued Antonio Brown. So I always want to have that over here, like, in my head. They have tried for big receivers. They just haven't been able to get a big weapon there. So I'm hoping that this offseason will be the one where we see them kind of branch away from the defense wins close games.
Does a number one wide receiver, an Antonio Brown, does that change the way that you want to beat teams?
At least suggests that you understand that position is important.
And what it also might change is, what it seems, whenever the Bills get in a situation where the pressure's coming and Josh Allen needs to get rid of the football, he needs to put a 50-50 ball up in the air, it always goes to John Brown. Mm. And I think John Brown's been great this season, but I think in an ideal world, when you have to throw a 50-50 ball, you don't want to have to throw it up to 5'10 John Brown. I think you'd like to have a better receiver, a more athletic receiver for that situation. I mean, last week, the final play against Cleveland, the ball is a little bit off. But I think you want a better receiver for that exact play, and they don't have that right now.
Yeah, I mean, their top weapon is a guy that signed a 2-year kind of prove-it deal off of a 1-year prove-it deal. I mean, all due respect to John Brown, I think the league has told him how good they think he is compared to other receivers. I'd like the number one receiver on the team to be someone that the entire league wishes they had.
Mike Evans.
Something like that, yeah. Just everybody would take him. Mm-hmm. And for John Brown, be my number two, and I'm good to go at that point. You know, it's been frustrating to see the slow build of this offense, and this year was supposed to be a step in the right direction. It's funny how the offseason and then the regular season changed.
Really quickly.
The offseason was all about, oh my God, they've added so much to the offense, they've added so much, everything's in place now.
Be patient.
And then right now it's, well, sure, they need a little more. They've needed more on their offense for 3 years.
Yeah, it needs to be more, but it needs to be high-end. Like, they added to the offense this offseason, but it was in volume. Like, they didn't go out and add any blue-chip A-plus.
And that's another thing.
Like,
you know, there's a certain faction of Bills fans, I think, that are impressed with studious decisions that never put you in salary cap trouble.
Right.
Like, you don't hang banners for not having a big contract.
Right.
You know, eventually this team will have to decide who gets the big money. And, you know, I believe that Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott will ultimately decide players will get big contracts, but you don't really get any points for not having that right now. You know, it just means you don't have anybody worth it or anybody on a second contract.
I also think, too, guys, the sort of atmosphere, the environment of the AFC right now, I think has turned things up a little bit. Because right now, and I continue to say this and think about this, if they have a 15th ranked offense, they're probably 8-1, okay? And they're 8-1 and they're tied for the lead in this division. They're tied for first in the AFC.
And we're not thinking about them missing the playoffs at all.
Exactly right. And I think it just goes to the point that because their offense can't seem to just be a little bit better and more efficient, that they're putting themselves in a position where now, and it's really only the difference of 10 spots. And how many yards is the difference between the 25th passing offense and the 15th passing offense? 60? Mm-hmm. 65 well, yards a game?
One thing, my favorite stat that came out was when the Bills play, what is it, top 15 offenses or top 8 offenses in the last however many, 2 years, they are 0-8. And
can't keep up.
But their average points are 20. The average score is 29-9.
Just and can't
to
keep
me,
up.
Think about that for a second. So it's just jarring. It's not that, oh, the defense gives up points. It's when you play a good offense, your offense goes away.
It gets dwarfed.
That's the best way to keep the Bills off the scoreboard is actually just to have a good offense. And the Bills don't score. They can't keep up. So when people talk about style points and wanting to win with 300-yard passing, I think it's because we want to see them finally win games that way to prove that, you know, they've taken a step.
All right, Jeremy.
All right.
Appreciate it, man.
See you, gentlemen. Thanks.
Yep, enjoy the rest of your day. That was Constructing the Game Plan presented by Admark Construction Equipment and Supplies, equipment you need when you need it. So, Joe, we got anything decent to talk about today, right? I mean, this matchup is, you know, listen, there's not a lot of stars. I tried to go back and watch that Colts game. I don't know, you're not going to get anything out of that Colts game to make you feel one way or another about this Dolphins team. They're not very good. Their quarterback, Ryan Fitzpatrick, basically, we know what he is. They're without their best weapon in Preston Williams, who really came on, and he came on a lot of because of what Ryan Fitzpatrick fed him the football before the season started. Preston Williams was a guy that they had high hopes for. He's a rookie receiver,
undrafted rookie receiver,
and the insertion of Fitzpatrick back into the starting lineup saw the emergence of Williams, and I think that says a lot about where Fitzpatrick is right now and how well he's playing for this Dolphins team. Last week, they're playing a Colts team that has their backup quarterback in Brian Hoyer, and their defense played fairly well. And that's the one thing that you want to look at with this Bills matchup today is, can the offense just put up enough points to have these people, just this Dolphins team, just go away? And I don't know, and they need to. Listen, they scored 31 points on them the last time they played. Asterisk next to that. Score 31.
Micah Hyde's onside kick return for a touchdown. Yeah.
And really, for me, what it comes down to, Joe, is it's either they go on a 10-play, 15-play, 80-yard drive and score a touchdown, or they punt. And for me, that's where the concerns of this offense continue to be is, you know, and we could talk about the field goal kicker right now if you want.
We could.
The 32nd,
it could be done.
32nd ranked kicker in football right now per percentage.
Also first in cap it.
So, in that situation, the Bills aren't getting in a position to score points every drive. And that's really all. And I know people don't hate the idea of settling for field goals all the time, but guess what? 3 points is better than zero. And that's what they're mostly averaging on every drive.
Pretty much. I wonder about, like Jeremy brought this up, like style points. And we've been waiting for that. We've been waiting for that for how many games? And like, is a 17-10 type of victory, even 16-10, you get a couple field goals. Like, that's really what they've been this season. Like you just said, like, they're averaging a field goal. Like, that's what they're doing for their drives. Unless they get in the red zone, then they're scoring. But what am I looking to get out of them today against this opponent? Like, I think you should expect at some point that they're going to have a big game. If they're going to be a true playoff team, if they're going to be a true, whatever they end up at, 10-6 team, then you would expect that at least once or twice they're going to come out and just dominate an opponent that they should dominate. And that should be, that would have to involve you being good enough to do that on the offensive side of the football. And I do wonder if they're even capable of doing that against lesser opponents like the Miami Dolphins. And if they can't do it like today against the Miami Dolphins, that makes me worried of what you're going to do the rest of the season when you have to play Denver, who has a top five defense. You have to play New England, who has a great defense. You have to play Pittsburgh, who has a really good defense. Even Dallas is competent on the defensive side of the football. If you haven't been able to do it against all these bad teams and these bad defenses and like Philadelphia, the worst secondary in the league, and you can throw for 250 yards, What are you going to do against these tougher opponents? What are you going to do when you make it to the playoffs? Because that's the next step after this week. This is really, maybe you want to throw Denver in the mix here. I don't know what you would think of this. I think this is maybe like the last game you can kind of consider like a gimme game. And I still think it should be considered a gimme game.
I do too.
The Dolphins won two in a row, but come on. This is the least talented football team I've seen in how long?
Well, hold your horses because the New York Jets, I just pulled up some football outsider stats. Yeah. The New York Jets are on a remarkably bad offensive stretch right now. And obviously a lot of that comes from the injury earlier in the season, the mono to Sam Darnold, but it's not like they've been that much better. I want to give you some stats here about average drives for offenses. And let's start with yards per drive. The New York Jets are bottom of the barrel at 19 yards, 19.68 yards really? Per drive. Okay, now get this.
Okay.
Washington is 31st. They're at 24.
Okay.
They're almost a full 5 yards below the 31st ranked offense. So the Jets have been really, really bad. But Miami's right there at 24.02 yards per drive. But the Bills, they rank 22nd in football with just under 30 yards per drive. And really, the difference between the 22nd team and the 30th team is only about 5 yards. So right now, they're at the bottom of the barrel in yards per drive. And this is even more the important stat to me is the points per drive, where they rank 23rd in football at 1.67 yards per drive. And if you look at the top of the league...
Points per drive, yeah.
Points per drive. And if you look at the top of the league, Kansas City and Baltimore is averaging 3 points per drive. So, you know, you are a far step away from the top offense, which I think we knew. But at some point here, like... These are the sort of raw stats that I like looking at as points per drive and yards per drive, because what that is a true barometer of how efficient the offense is as a whole, not just cherry picking box score stats from specific games. This is a collection of all the games so far, and I think it's a pretty accurate. And yet, here's the thing: 22nd and 23rd, right, Joe?
Yeah.
This team was 32nd and 31st in most of those categories last season. So I don't want to be the guy that doesn't give them any credit for them clearly taking a step. It's just the step.
It's
I think
not a
needs
big
to
enough
be better.
Step.
The step needs to be greater.
It's not a big enough step because when you're what we're seeing right now is that when push comes to shove and you get even like you get in tight spaces and you need to tight games and you need to be able to score points to be able to win. Like we saw it in the New England game when your defense is having a great performance and you're still not able to put up enough points to win. That's when you have a problem on offense. That's when the step has not become big enough. And those numbers just make it even more frustrating to me that they have not connected on the big plays yet this year. Because I imagine that with what they've done this year, being 22nd in the league in yards per drive and 23rd in points, and Josh Allen being one of the better quarterbacks in the league in the short to intermediate routes, what would it look like if they did connect on the big plays, even to the rate that they were last year, which was not prolific, but they were able to do it? What does that offense look like? That's what I think the frustration really comes into play, and that's why a lot of fans have always brought up, and that's why I've brought up a lot, why you need to be able to include that vertical aspect of your offense, that big play, the yards after the catch, Devin Singletary, getting him out in space, because that equals big plays. And the fact that they have been 22nd in the league, which is not good, but it's not the worst team in football, the fact that they have done that without any aspect of a big play ability to their offense, to me, is pretty remarkable. Because now I think, hey, if you do find a way, if Josh Allen finds a way to connect on some of these open guys downfield, if they do start to get the ball to Singletary more in space, if they do start to get it to their receivers on the run more instead of coming back to the football so that you can have more yards after the catch, get more big plays that way, then now we're talking about that 15th ranked offense that you talked about that would be an 8-1 football team right now. And then we have another layer to what this whole team is, and I think you have another argument to be made that they are legitimately good. But right now, that does not exist because they can't connect on any of these vertical passes or any of these big plays at all.
Got to take a quick time out. We'd be happy to take your phone calls, 803-0550, 1-888-552-550. A quick tweet that I want to get to. Speaking of offense, any stats that show us how well the offensive line is playing for reference? And yes, in fact, there are some stats. And I can tell you right now that in terms of run blocking, the Buffalo Bills in adjusted line yards, which is essentially a down and distance situation opponent number, the Bills are ranked second in football behind New Orleans and ahead of Dallas. So their run blocking is some of the best in football by far. Pass blocking, they're right around 22nd, 23rd, but I don't think it's a true barometer. Josh Allen's a unique passer, He takes sacks a lot of other guys don't take just because he's always trying to extend play. So I don't know if that's a perfect stat to use. But I'd say the offensive line is playing just fine considering where the Bills are offensively. The offensive line's not the problem, that's for sure. Be sure to tune in at 12:30 today following the roundtable for Eric Wood with Sean McDermott. It's brought to you by Lawler and Witkowski, Buffalo's local team of IRS tax problem solvers. Visit irsdistress.com. Be sure to tune in next hour for our fantasy segment. It's brought to you by Geico. Saving you money on car insurance has been in Geico's playbook for over 75 years. So after the game, get a quote at geico.com. Geico, so easy, a caveman can do it. After a quick timeout, we'll be back, continue talking Bills and Dolphins here on the Buffalo Bills Radio Network.
Well, there's time on task as well. There's continuity with our receivers and our tight ends and backs. And so guys need to practice in order to build reps and work together. And when you look at it, they're not all high percentage throws. The further they get down the field, the lower the percentage is just naturally. And then because of the distance traveled, right? And then within that, though, we do have to hit those. And I'm confident that we will hit those when called upon. And that gets back to the level of execution, whether it's short, intermediate, or long throws.
Welcome back to Countdown to Kickoff here on the Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Nate Geary, Joe DiBiase here with you. Let's get a quick weather update from Joe. You got anything from beautiful, sunny Miami, Florida?
80 degrees, sunny, windy. Sal actually mentioned this, I think, last hour, that it's going to be windy.
It's always windy for Bills games.
The weather's brought to you by Geico.
That's why you get the big arm quarterback.
Why is my computer lying to me then? Because I've got 71 by kickoff.
Interesting.
Seems like we've got some
conflicting reports.
Conflicting reports of weather. Either way.
But your weather is brought to you by Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
I've got a weather update for you that I know is going to be right.
It's colder out
here. Miami, nicer than Buffalo.
I mean, I rounded up a little bit. 76, I guess.
There's your weather.
Thanks, Ollie.
Warmer than Buffalo. Speaking of Buffalo, the Bills were one of 8 teams who went yesterday and watched Colin Kaepernick's workout.
Adam Schefter reporting a list of 8 teams that attended Kaepernick's workout. The Bills are on the list.
Are you surprised?
I am surprised.
I am very surprised.
I thought, especially with it only being 8 teams, we didn't have anything that even said the Bills were going to the one the NFL was putting together. So, yeah, I'm a little surprised, to say the least.
I'm really surprised. You know, like a couple teams on that list.
I mean, we shouldn't be, though. Like, you just send anybody to go watch it. Like, it's not that hard. But still a little surprised.
I mean, nothing that the Bills do, I like, actually surprises me or probably surprises a lot of people. But I am a little bit surprised that, you know, at this point in the season, you feel like you're in a good situation with your backup quarterback with Matt Barkley. For everything that we know, they like their starting quarterback, the guy that they drafted. So I am a little interested that I feel like they're probably set at that position.
They could
there
think about it for the offseason.
Right.
That could be what they're thinking. I think that's, like, that'd be my guess. I don't really, I would not bet on him signing this year before the end of the season. So if that's the case and you're wondering about him for the offseason and this is your best chance to get a real good look at him and what kind of shape he's still in and how he's throwing the football, then maybe that's what their thought process was. But even then, isn't Barkley under contract for next year?
Yeah.
So maybe it is a little interesting. But
it's definitely interesting. I don't really want to talk about it any more than that other than to say the Bills went to the workout. I don't suspect the Bills are going to sign Colin Kaepernick at any point moving
forward
here.
They are plus 700 to do it, according to BetOnline.
So BetOnline's got the Bills at the fourth highest odds to sign Colin Kaepernick. I would bet if
what would have to happen? You need a catastrophic injury.
You'd need a catastrophic injury to Josh Allen, and not only that, you would need. Here's the thing.
Does this say anything to you though? That hey, maybe this is a sign that. If there was, like, a lot of teams have had the opportunity to sign him. Like, they've had injuries. And like, the Lions right now have Jeff Driscoll playing quarterback. Like, plenty of examples of teams have had the opportunity to sign him. Does this say anything to, hey, if the Bills did, knock on wood, hope this doesn't happen, but had a catastrophic injury at quarterback, maybe had 2 injuries at quarterback, that they'd be willing to go down that path?
I think it seems like they'd be willing to. I don't think you go unless it's something that you're willing to at least look at, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's my thought process there. I don't know. Here's the thing. If you're Colin Kaepernick, and let's say the Bills are the only team that gives you an offer, are you going to Buffalo?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
after, I'm just saying. I'm not calling anybody out.
He seems to accept that he knows he's going to be a backup if he signs anywhere.
That's not even the point I want to make. And, okay. And I'm not trying to call anybody out, or I'm not trying to get on a side of this issue other than to say, when Colin Kaepernick was here in Buffalo 3 years ago, 4 years ago now, with San Francisco, Chip Kelly was the coach. It was sort of the midst of the whole kneeling thing. He was not well received here in Buffalo at all. In fact, he mentioned after the game that it was one of the worst cities he had been to in terms of reaction that he got from fan bases. That's part of the reason why I thought it was shocking. There's a lot of politically driven reasons why I think the Bills wouldn't have even gone to the to this event, and the fact that they did, I think, is maybe the most interesting part. It's not to me whether or not the Bills sign him or not, because I don't think they're going to sign him. Mm-hmm. But I think it really is interesting, and I'm not suggesting there's some sort of gaslighting going on, but it is really interesting that the team wanted a representative there. I find that incredibly interesting, and I would love to be a fly on the wall to understand the situation and the conversations that surrounded that and their preparation to go do that. So it's interesting, but it's certainly not a story about this Bills-Dolphins matchup. Colin Kaepernick will not be playing football at least for another week as he continues to look for work in the NFL, and the NFL made a statement that he is a free agent capable of signing with any team at any point here moving forward, although I don't know how disingenuous that is or not, but at any point, the Bills, they, according to Adam Schefter, were in attendance. That is all we have to report on the story. Other than that, there is no story that the Bills are any more closer to signing the player or making a decision on it. But it is newsworthy and noteworthy that they were in attendance.
Before we get back into Bills-Dolphins, you see Gronkowski's Instagram post this morning, too?
I did not.
Just a little bit ago?
Did he send some subliminal messaging?
I mean, it could be nothing, but he says, I have a big announcement to make. I can't wait to drop it all on you. It's going to be fun. It's going to be wild. It's going to be a good time. Tomorrow, 9 o'clock. No, Tuesday at 9 o'clock. You'll hear the news. Let's go.
He is opening a second G&G fitness location.
That could be all it is. Or, you know, maybe it is.
He's not coming back.
Well, the timing's interesting.
Yes,
because
it is.
Saturday, November 30th, so 2 weeks from yesterday, is the last day he can come back. You don't think he's coming
back? He's not coming back.
At all?
Nope. Not coming back.
Sounds like the owner's trying to get him to come back.
Of course he is. Why wouldn't you?
And, you know, I'll leave a slight door open. Like, he does not look like he is in the type of shape to play a full-time tight end position.
I will emphatically say there is zero chance he's coming back to play football.
What if the Patriots told him you don't have to block?
What if the Patriots told him that he didn't have to come to practice?
Then maybe that's okay. You're right. Now we're going down a path.
Here's the thing about Rob Gronkowski before we go to break. It's always been about his body and the injuries and the wear and tear on his body. This was a player that
officially never retire then? Like, why is he not put the paperwork in on it?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair
I want to hold on. I think you're right. I think you're ultimately going to be right. I don't think he does come back and play. But I do believe that there is a chance. I don't think that he's slammed the door completely shut, or else he would have filed the paperwork to retire.
I just don't think he starts a CBD company, okay? I don't think he's starting some of the things off the field that he's doing. I don't think he loses 35 pounds, you know, to – and again, I keep going back to the point of, do you remember what happened to him in college? Like, the reason that he wasn't a first-round pick and that he fell to the Patriots in the first place was because of the severe spinal cord injury that he got in college at Arizona. And then in the NFL, multiple back injuries, multiple head injuries, multiple neck injuries. Like, those things pile up on a player. And the way that he plays football, he's a physical specimen. And when you lose 35 pounds and you're out of football for, honestly, how much football has he played in 3 years? Not much.
Not much.
Not much football. Coming up next, this date in Bills history with Howard Simon looking back at the big games, seasons, and moves the Bills have made that have come to shape the legacy of the team. It's brought to you by Northtown Automotive, celebrating 50 years of serving Western New York. So we'll get to that next on the other side from Countdown to Kickoff on the Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Welcome back to Countdown to Kickoff. We have to, you know, give you another quick report because Adam Schefter just reported that the Bills said they did not attend Colin Kaepernick's. What a freaking mess this whole Kaepernick thing has been. It's just from start to finish.
Nobody knows what's going on.
Just everyone's a giant mess. It's just a tire fire, everything around it. What are you going to do? Time now for this date in Bills history with Howard Simon. It's brought to you by Northtown Automotive, celebrating 50 years of serving Western New York.
Northtown is celebrating 50 years as we take a walk down memory lane with this year in Bills history. The 2000 season began for the Bills with a rematch against a team that painfully and controversially knocked them out of the playoffs the year before, the Tennessee Titans. In a primetime game at Ralph Wilson Stadium, Steve Christie's 33-yard field goal with 31 seconds left put the Bills in front 16-13. There would be no replay of the Music City Miracle. The Titans did not return the ensuing kick for a touchdown, but they did try a 60-yard field goal attempt that sailed wide as time ran out. In Week 2, Rob Johnson came back from a foot injury, threw three TDs, and the Bills beat the Packers and Brett Favre. Week 4, there was a heartbreaking defeat at the hands of the Colts. A last-second field goal by Mike Vanderjagt gave Indianapolis the victory. In Week 6, it was Doug Flutie time. He came on for Johnson, who was injured. Flutie directed a game-winning drive in overtime as Steve Christie hit a 46-yard field goal. Flutie magic the following week, too. He threw the only touchdown pass on a wet and windy day in New England. Coupled that with three field goals from Christie, the Bills beat Bill Belichick's Patriots 16-13. Flutie would improve to 3-1 as the starter with a 20-3 win in Chicago in Week 10. But after that game, Wade Phillips announced that Rob Johnson would be the starter the following week. He returned and had what was his signature victory as a Bills quarterback, rallying them in the fourth quarter with a 21-17 win at Kansas City. There was a Rob Johnson 12-yard touchdown run that provided the winning points. The Bills would then go on a four-game losing streak. They would be eliminated from playoff contention with a 44-20 blowout defeat in Indianapolis. And then, leading up to the finale of the season, Ralph Wilson fired general manager John Butler. The Bills end the season with a win in Seattle 42-23. It was the last game for Doug Flutie as a Bill. Turns out it was the last game for Wade Phillips as Bills head coach. While still on Sheridan Drive in Amherst, the Chrysler franchise is added and combined with the popular Jeep brand in 2000. The Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Fiat and ProMaster Auto Complex is now housed on Niagara Falls Boulevard. Celebrating 50 years serving Western New York, remember, whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Thank you, Howard. Nate Geary here, Joe DiBiase, about to hand things over to Sal Capaccio, Eric Wood, and Chris Brown for the Buffalo Bills Roundtable in a few moments. Before we do that, do you want to hear some stats, Joe?
Oh, of course. I'm always down for that.
I got stats. You know, I'm filled with stats. I got lots of stats. Okay, so the Bills, we talked about their yards per drive, points per drive. Let's talk a little bit more about this offensive DVOA and where this offense is altogether, right? And their total offensive DVOA through what they're at, 9 games, 10 weeks, going on to week 11 this week. The Bills are 25th in football. Miami's 31st. They do in percentage points have a bit of a distance between them. The Bills are negative 11. Miami's negative 28.8. So there is a bit of a difference between 25th and 31st there. Passing DVOA, not a huge difference, though, for this one. Miami's 31st in football. The Bills are 28th. And then rushing, the Bills still rank 7th in football in rushing DVOA, where Miami really struggles. You mentioned their yards per carry average, specifically Kalen Ballage, has not been good. Defensively, Joe, here's the trend that I do find interesting with the run defense is pretty much ever since the Miami game. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Miami game was the game that really started the downward spiral of this rushing offense. During that Miami game, the Bills were ranked 3rd in rush defense. They're 21st now.
That just really shows how bad it's been.
It's been bad. And now they're at 115 yards a game they're giving up on the ground. And here's the thing I'll say about this run defense, Joe. It doesn't really seem like there's a clear solution at hand other than the offense needs to hold the ball longer to keep this run defense off the field.
I wonder if you do play Ed Oliver more. Not even because, like, he's not really been the threat rushing the passer that we all hoped.
He has not been.
But Greg Cosell, I think, was the one who was talking about it on our station on Friday, that he's actually been relatively good in run defense. Like, he's been better than Jordan Phillips. Jordan Phillips has been way more effective as a pass rusher.
Which is not what I don't think. If you looked at the two players,
you would think the opposite.
You'd think the exact opposite.
And right now, you've got Ed Oliver playing about 30 to 35% of the snaps in the past couple games. But if he is one of your better run defensive tackles right now, even if he is getting swallowed up right now on passing plays, maybe you just see an uptick in his snap count, and that'll help you out in between the tackles, which again, right, that's weird to think about because you look at Oliver, he stood next to Jordan Phillips. You'd think Jordan Phillips is 10 times the run defender, but
Maybe you see some more plays from Oliver. I'd like to see that.
All right, going to take a quick timeout on the other side. Again, Buffalo Bills roundtable coming up next, and then Joe and I will take back over right around 11:45 and bring you right into Kick Inside the Huddle at that time as well. So you're listening to Countdown to Kickoff. This is Buffalo Bills football.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.